Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Not only is Ben a writer for the Chicago Reader who writes on government and politics, but he's here with me today. Hello, Ben.
Thank you, Dave. Hello to you.
Today we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on September 6, 2012, and it's titled, "With Democrats Like These, Who Needs Republicans?" And in this article, you summarize how government policies under Chicago's last two mayors, both Democrats, resemble the policies of Republicans. And you spent a little time talking about the last president, George W. Bush, and his relationship with the last mayor, Daley. And in particular, you talk about Bush's 60th birthday celebration in 2006. And there's a photo in the Reader of the mayor and the president there together. And
the birthday
cake. Yeah. So Bush came to Chicago, and he had dinner, a birthday dinner with Mayor Daley. And that happened to be the day that Robert Sorich and a few others were convicted of mail fraud in connection with city hiring corruption. And it's disturbing on a couple levels. First of all, you write of Bush sending a message to federal prosecutors that don't go after Daley,
right.
You know, don't go up the food chain.
Yeah.
But it also implies that Bush colluded with Daley to minimize the bad optics of that conviction happening on that day,
yeah.
Which is pretty significant collusion. What's your reaction to that?
I sort of believe that, actually. I mean, I'm not privy. I think I may have mentioned this in the story or I may have cut this funny line. I'm not privy to the innermost secrets of Mayor Daley or President George W. Bush. But so I'm an outsider looking in. It's a whole lot of coincidence. And I remember at the time being struck by it and how difficult it was to take. It just in terms of the larger context of being, I don't know, what do you call me, a reformer? I don't know what I am, an agitator or a troublemaker or what have you, trying to force some sort of opposition or encourage some kind of opposition to what's going on in Chicago. And traditionally, going way back, reformers or independents or whatever you want to call them, do-gooders, could rely on a certain segment of the Republican Party for assistance under the mantle of good government. They may be conservative Republicans on issues like abortion or gay marriage, which wasn't an issue back in the 70s, but you get the point. But they were fundamentally reformers and believed in an open government. And what Daley years signaled to me is that the Republican Party had very much been aligned with Daley all along. And there was no check and balance from the Republican Party. They were all part of the Daley Party. And this really came home when the president of the United States, the leading Republican, the man that Democrats throughout the city of Chicago despised, at least politically speaking, for the wars and his anti-constitutional edicts and his anti-environmental stands and his anti-abortion stands, or his anti-pro-choice stands.
The opposite of progressive.
The opposite of what progressives like to think, was standing arm in arm with Daley and protecting Daley's political interests while Daley protected his. So I always had a difficult time stomaching that, and it always irritated me, Dave, when I'd see references to Daley as a Democrat, you know, the Daley faction of the Democratic Party, because I believe that Daley really wasn't a Democrat in any way. He was a Daley. He was a Daley-crad. He was in it for himself.
John Cass in the Tribune writes about this as the Illinois Combine, that it's not strictly Democrat or Republican.
Yes, John is a little late to the fold, but we welcome him. He was a big Daley supporter.
Well, he covered City Hall before he was a columnist.
He covered it well. When he was a columnist, the early years, he was a big Daley guy, and he wrote many, what would it be called, like poems to Daley or odes to Daley? And then somewhere along the line, he found his way. And like as I said, I've welcomed him to our little fold ever since.
Well, speaking of turnarounds, let's talk about another person who arguably has turned around. You mentioned in your article a recent speech at the City Club of Chicago by Juan Rangel, head of the UNO Charter School or UNO Charter School operation. And you talk about the fact that Rogers Park Alderman Joe Moore sat at Rangel's table at that meeting. And for our listeners' benefit, I'll talk about Rangel and some of his connections. He was appointed by the current mayor, Emanuel, to the Public Building Commission. He backed powerful Alderman Ed Burke's brother, Dan, for a re-election to the General Assembly, and about 95% of his organization's 2011 revenue reportedly came from the government. So he's a pretty well-connected guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is according to the Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to Alderman Moore, you've defended Alderman Moore recently, in fact, based on Moore's progressive credentials, which, you know, I'll just name a few. He led the city council in votes against Mayor Daley in Mayor Daley's final term. He opposed Daley over such things as minimum wage for Walmart workers, funding for the Inspector General. But here he is sitting at Ron Gill's table. So I'm just wondering, in light of these recent developments with Moore, if you want to revise or update your assessment of where Moore stands as a progressive.
Well, as a progressive, as we know what progressives are, you know, I think Joe's left that fold and has become more of what in Chicago we call a regular Democrat.
He's become normalized.
Yeah, he's been normalized. I've taken my fair share of abuse, by the way, for my defense of Jolton Joe Moore in that piece, which I believe we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did.
And I admit, how do I explain this, that I will have a sentimental attachment to Joe Moore for having waged the good fight for so long. Plus, he's, on a personal level, a very friendly guy. So I'm reluctant to just pound away on Joe, but, you know, Joe, you're really making it hard on a guy, you know? I mean, let's call it for what he is. He's a regular Democrat in the Rahm Emanuel regime. So he goes with the flow now, and that's who he is. So politically, it's, I think, inaccurate and unfair to Joe to view him in terms of what he was. Times have changed. He's moved on.
We have to move on as well.
We have to move on as well.
He's reinvented himself, and we have to admit
it. As I've said to you before, there's only so much a person could take pounding his head against the wall of Chicago. I think I'm about to pass out myself.
That's the Vicodin, probably.
That's the Vicodin. Yeah. You know, Juan Rangel has come to symbolize, for better or worse, the separate system of publicly funded schools that has emerged under Rahm. This is a whole developing issue. We're sort of dividing our public school system into two factions. There's the unionized regular public schools, and then there's the non-unionized charter public schools. They're public in funding only. They receive their money from taxpayers, but they have far more latitude to make their own rules. So thus, Juan Rangel, the head of UNO, which is a confederation of approximately, I believe, don't quote me, in his 13 schools, pays himself a greater salary than Jean-Claude Brizard, who is the head of the entire school system. That's the latitude and the freedom that a charter school has. They collect their public dollars and spend them as they want.
Some call charter schools a savvy investment strategy for private corporations to tap into government funding in ways that they didn't before.
Would the sum, who calls them that, be one Dave Glowes?
I didn't make this up.
You know, I was telling you before we went on the air, my mind is really filled up these days with thoughts about our current school crisis. I'm writing about it for next week, and the role that charter schools play in it, of course, is very fundamental. And I'm imploring the citizens of Chicago to think about where we're heading with this whole public school situation, where we are effectively radically changing the profession of a teacher. And so I would say to Joe, you know, when you sign on to UNO, you're also signing on to a degree to that radical transformation. And if you do sign on to charter schools, I think a politician like Joe should use whatever influence he has and what good standing he has to try to at least change the law that prevents charter school teachers from joining the Chicago Teachers Union. I think everybody would agree on a very principled level that's like a violation of their First Amendment rights. Well, let's check out the Constitution that we have lying
which we have
here.
Right here.
I would say, you know, it's pretty ironic that the Republican Party, which is where I was leaping off from, believes that corporations should have a First Amendment right to give as much as they want to campaigns, but they don't believe that teachers have a First Amendment right to join the union that they want. So I would call that a contradiction.
Let's shift gears a little bit, to use a bicycling reference. We reported back in July of 2008, almost exactly 4 years ago, on the dead zone in Bensonville, which is the 15% of Bensonville that the city managed to tear away from the municipality of Bensonville, and they took over a certain residential neighborhood so they could tear down houses and build runways on them to extend O'Hare.
Yes.
Our regular listeners might be surprised to learn, reading today's article, that maybe the destruction of Bensonville's neighborhood was unnecessary or at least premature. Upon how much of the dead zone has the city done actual construction, do you know?
It's been a while since I've been to the dead zone, and I would just urge our listeners, if you read the column that Dave's referring to online, you could hit on the link for what I consider our delightful telling of the day that Dave and I spent biking around Bensonville. We actually biked to Bensonville, and it really brought home to me graphically I don't know, what was it, the anti-environmental aspect of the entire O'Hare expansion plan, where they were overreaching to expand an airport when there was no demand for it. There was no demand for it. There was uncertain demand back then, and it's pretty clear that there is no demand now. Now, what the powers that be tell us is that, well, in the future, there will be demand. So build the airstrip and they will come to it type.
Build it and they will land.
Yeah, build it and they will land. I don't know if that's so, but the inner libertarian in me says this is what happens when you give government free rein to do whatever it wants, regardless of whether there's a demand for it. So if you're going to spend government dollars building something and you think that just building something is good for the economy, well, okay, but I could think of better things, more constructive things to build if we're just in the business of building things than expanding the airport. So I don't believe anything in this site has been built. If I am wrong and any of our listeners in the greater Bensonville area can tell me that, then just write us.
Contact at mrradio.org if you want to give us the scoop on
Bensonville. You know, I used to go out there all the time. I was obsessed, as you know, with that whole Bensonville story. For that obsession lasted for maybe 6 months.
I don't know if you're going to talk about this in your next article, but I have today's press release from the Chicago Teachers Union. Contract talks remain hopeful, but strike plans continue. And there's this one paragraph that I just love. This is a quote from Stephanie Gadlin, who is a spokeswoman for the union. It says, "We have concerns about CPS's, quote, contingency plan, unquote. It sounds like a train wreck. It calls for parents to drop off children at holding centers for half a day of babysitting staffed by strangers, suits from central office, and preachers. Most of these people have zero experience working with school children or large groups of teens. It's the equivalent of opening a fire station without firefighters and giving a bunch of lawyers, accountants, and clerical workers a few fire hoses and rubber boots." Did you read this?
I saw the headline. I got the email.
As we were talking, the strike is imminent to start Monday.
Yeah.
So you think it's going to happen?
Well, put me on the record. Okay. You know, I've been saying all along there will not be a strike. And I know how these things go. It's always darkest before the dawn, to quote somebody. I don't even know who said that. Maybe my doctor, who said, "I'll get better before I get worse."
It was Noam Chomsky.
Yeah, Noam Chomsky. let's just, Yogi Berra said that. I believe it was Mark Twain.
So, Stud Circle.
Mike Reichel said it. I think it was Cup. Anyway.
Stella Foster.
Stella Foster. So I'm not going to wuss out on my prediction like some people I know who I will not mention. The point is, when you make a prediction, this has to do with sports as well as politics, you stay with your prediction, even though it's a bumpy ride. Having said that, I'm sticking with my prediction that they will avoid a strike. I base that prediction, however, here I am defending myself because it looks like I'm going to be wrong, but I base that prediction on the thought that rational minds would prevail, particularly, as I've said many times, with the president's reelection campaign gearing up.
Bad optics if Rahm lets a strike go on.
Yes.
We've talked about that.
Yeah, we've talked about that. So I've always thought that from just a very practical standpoint, pragmatic minds would prevail and some sort of solution would occur. As we're speaking, it's Friday, September 7th, and the strike would occur
on the 10th.
On the 10th, would they miss Monday or would they go to school Monday and then strike Tuesday?
No, as I understand it, they would not go to school on Monday.
Okay. I'm always confused. What can they say? The strike date is the 10th.
Kids would go to these fire stations with the rubber boots.
As long as they have juice and cookies. So I really don't want there to be a strike for so many reasons on so many levels.
No one claims that they do want a strike.
I know. I firmly believe that Rahm Emanuel was lusting for a strike. I believe that the charter school advocates, the folks who really are pushing for the destruction of the union, were lusting for a strike. And I know there's a lot of angry school teachers that really want to stick it to the man, and just they're so angry they want to go on strike. So despite what everybody says, I think there's a lot of people in this town who want a strike. I have always, as you know, I can't even say anything bad about Joe Moore. So, you know, I'm kind of in the wimpy pool and I don't want to be a strike.
You actually don't want to strike.
Yeah, I really don't want to strike. I think it's bad for teachers. I think it's really bad for kids. I feel for everybody who's affected, like the athletes who won't get to play in the big games, and the parents and the kids are trying to get those college applications in, and just kids who want to go to school, you know, they like school, and the families of the teachers who need the money. And I mean, it's not good for anybody. I don't want a strike. So I think that I'm different than Mayor Emanuel and the charter school advocates and the really angry hothead teachers in there. So I'm sticking to my prediction that cooler heads prevail and that there won't be a strike. So if there is a strike, the whole world can go, ha ha, you were wrong. What's your prediction?
I honestly don't know. I think it could go either way.
Okay, that is not a prediction. That's an equivocation.
I'm firmly equivocating.
That reminds me of a time I was with a bunch of friends. We were watching Game 7, Lakers versus Celtics. And we were going around the room saying, who do we want to win? And it got to my good pal, JR. And I go, JR, who do you want to win? And he goes, I think the Celtics are going to win. And I'm like, I didn't ask you who you thought was going
to
win.
Who do you want?
Take a stand, man. It was like a room full of people. Half were for the Celtics, half were for the Lakers. You
know, so are you asking me if I want a strike?
I hadn't thought of that, but are you like a charter school advocate and a ROM person and a hot-headed
what do you
teacher?
Think? I don't want to see a strike. I think it's bad for everybody. I agree with you.
Yeah.
That's all we got time for, though, Ben.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader. If you'd like to hear more of our interviews, go to MrRadio.org. There you'll find instructions on how to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any interviews. Or you can search on iTunes for Ben Jarofsky or for me, Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.